WICC600.com.
And we welcome you to David Smith's Exchange here at WICC 600, an afternoon of interesting guests from 1 to 4 o'clock live every day. And we are taking a focus on the medical situation that all too many people find themselves in, having a long-term chronic illness and dealing with the medical profession in so doing. We have one of the very finest experts in long-term care with us today, and he and one of his patients, who was an essayist and author and so forth, Alida Brill, teamed up on a book called Dancing at the River's Edge, A Patient and Her Doctor Negotiate Life with Chronic Illness. And Dr. Michael Luxton, it's good to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
And it's good to be with you.
Tell us a little bit about how this relationship got going.
Well, the relationship is actually, I guess you could say, both unusual and not unusual. I met Ms. Brill about 30 years ago when she just came as a referral patient from a physician that she had previously seen in California, who was somebody I knew. And one of the differences, I think, was that she is extraordinarily articulate, is trained in evaluation of social manners and privacy and a variety of other things. So she took, in a very general sense, some of our conversations back and forth as I got to know her and treated her over years. And then it was actually at a dinner table conversation, because she came a friend, that my wife had suggested that we ought to write about this as a book. And neither she nor I had actually been thinking about doing that, but we did, and what we ended up doing was putting alternating chapters of the way she was feeling about things, the way I was feeling about virtually the same problem that she was dealing with, and how we interacted and how we learned from each other.
How much corroboration went on during this? Did you write them strictly separately so that you did not influence hers and she not yours?
That's correct. We each wrote our chapters completely independently, and then we looked at what each other had written, and in some cases reacted to that. We didn't change it. I think one of the most startling things, and something that she points out all the time, is that in the introduction, she started her introduction by saying, "I didn't choose to be ill." And I started my introduction by saying, "I didn't choose this career. This career chose me." And it was startling in the sense of how much we thought alike, and then at other times how different we were in seeing things.
Well, both of you have had seen a lot of this before. She had seen many, many doctors along the way to coming to your good hands, and you having, well, not chosen necessarily, but had this evolve in your career. You were used to this, what you term, catoon, right?
Yes.
Explain that to...
Well, what that is that for reasons that are personal to me, and just my wife and I had happened to travel a lot in Central America and Mexico, we were familiar with the Maya calendar. And the Maya calendar is different from the Western civilization calendar in that it distinguishes things more in natural life cycles. And so what we thought of is that issues relating to chronic illness can be looked at as immediate things, and from a doctor's point of view, that's, we do this right now or you're going to die type things.
Yeah.
They can also be thought of in things that I refer to as clock time. We've got several hours or a day or two to look at this. There's also calendar time that we need to think things out over the next several months. And then the catoon was the Maya concept of what effectively would be a generation. It was 40 years. And a point that I made repeatedly, and which she is very much aware of, is that sometimes I need to look at a 20-year-old who's just beginning an illness and be thinking of her at 40 and at 60, which is a very difficult concept to get across to people. Patients who end up with chronic illnesses begin to understand that you have to make decisions in the various time frames simultaneously. But most people who have had a fractured arm or appendicitis or something have no concept of the need to think in those terms.
Well, now it further gets complicated, of course, when you're looking in those terms, as you are not a starting physician at this point.
True.
And so for you to look at it in those terms for a 20-year-old means that you've got to be ready, one would think, to hand this off to somebody else.
That's correct. And that's fortunately, I'm not yet in the position of handing off, but there was a point in my career that we discuss in the book when I went to the National Institutes of Health for a 7-year period, did have to turn over patients to colleagues. I guess I would say in from my side, that was one of the most painful things I've ever done. And it isn't because of the pomposity that I was doing such a good job, is that most of the patients had become very close friends, and I understood a good deal about their personal lives over and above the illnesses that they had. And to just dump them on to somebody else, sometimes people who just were not interested in hearing any of this stuff, was very difficult.
And clearly difficult in some instances for the patients who were involved in that.
Right, and she discusses in her chapter about that same period of partly being, I guess I'll say, a bit cocky that she knew enough about her disease to take over. Partly she responded to a physician she had met that she liked, but what happened is that he was interested in a very narrow segment of her problem and missed a huge complicating feature that came up it wasn't disastrous, but it really made things much more difficult.
Yes, I mean, it's the famous Murphy's Law. You know, as soon as Michael Luxton leaves, then a twist occurs that nobody could have foreseen, and there you are. Well, let's go back to the basics of what it was that she was dealing with and how you chose to interface with her. And obviously, as you suggest, when you're dealing with somebody on a long-term basis like this, it doesn't come as much of a surprise to me that you do become a friend.
Yes, well, first of all, I guess I should explain, but what I do is I am a rheumatologist, and I deal with autoimmune rheumatic illnesses. A number of those illnesses are not precisely defined, and they sometimes meld one into another. This creates for patients, and Ms. Brill is in this category, getting different diagnoses or different names from different doctors all the time and being quite confused by that, and the issue of how well one handles uncertainty is an issue. I happen to have on my desk, I still do, an article that I tore out of a journal years and years ago, which was called Witchcraft and Lupus. And the article was about a woman who was desperately ill and who signed herself out of a hospital against medical advice and then reappeared completely well several months later and explained to her physicians that what she had done was go back to her native home and have a witch doctor remove the curse that her ex-boyfriend had placed on her. And what happened is that when I met Alita, she saw that article and asked me why I had it on the desk, and I had said, which I say many times a week, that it keeps me humble and just makes me realize that we know very little about these diseases. And that statement attracted her tremendously, because most of the physicians she had dealt with were, I guess I can use the word arrogant, just sort of saying, this is what you have, don't tell me that X, Y, and Z, and so on. And that's quite difficult for patients to deal with when the facts don't gel with what the physician is saying.
Well, and if not much is happening as a result of their coming forth with this diagnosis and prognosis for whatever, that becomes all the more frustrating on
that's
the part
correct.
Of a patient, no question about it.
That's correct.
Doctor, we've got to take a quick break here, catch people up on the traffic situation that they're dealing with on this soggy day. We are really pleased to have you with us, and we'll catch up with a little bit more of Alita's story and a further complication that she's dealing with right now, as a matter of fact, coming up in just a few minutes. Thanks so much for joining us today. Dancing at the River's Edge is the name of the book. A patient and her doctor negotiate life with chronic illness, something that thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are dealing with. But consider yourself so lucky to have a doctor like Dr. Michael Luxton. We're going to see how we're doing on the roads out there. We've got that power outage still working in Trumbull. UI with at least 100 customers in the Oxon Hill Putting Green Lane area. It's been going for, a couple of hours anyway now. So that's the story there. What else is going on? Let's find out from Patty. We'll be back with more on David Smith's Exchange right here at WICC 600 and 600.com.
600.com.
Hundreds of thousands of people, and probably more than that, are living with chronic illness. And a relationship or relationships they strike with their doctor can take many different forms and obviously have major impact on the way they're dealt with and the way they look at themselves and their situation. Dr. Michael Luxton is with us today, and he is one of the experts on long-term care of chronically ill patients, rheumatology in particular, but his patient that he co-authored this book with, Alida Brill, was a very talented author, a writer, a powerful person. And doctor, you know, this sort of thing has to call one's self-esteem and concern for one's own power base to be called on every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, of course, is one of the things, and one of the themes of the book is that, and The way I phrase it, the illness we think of as being on top of the person, but I'd rather think of it as that the person is on top of the illness. Just maintaining one's own personality, one's ability to function in the world, one's ability to be creative, to succeed with the burden of a chronic illness, and often having to hide that chronic illness, is a huge aspect of the care of such patients.
You know, I suspect that we've got a lot of people out there who are dealing with this one way or the other in one relationship or another. Have you got some suggestions as to how they seek out and deal with a physician who they are looking to get some help?
Well, I think the single biggest thing is to being able to communicate. And to be able to speak of everything that's bothering you. And there are physicians who are willing to do that, there are physicians who are not. But it's there are hidden languages that patients use. They'll hint at something, they'll speak obliquely about a topic, basically asking their physician to ask them about that and why do they bring that up and so on. It's a communication that goes both ways. The physician has to be able to understand what the patient is trying to state. Patient also has to be willing to be forceful enough to bring that topic forward. Because you end up, when you're planning out not just what we're going to do next week, but what we're going to do for the next year and 10 years and so on, you need to be able to talk about a lot of things. This has to do with childbearing. It has to do with how you relate to your spouse. It has to do with how you manage your job. Lots and lots of things that need to be communicated and are not often communicated unless both parties are willing to go the extra mile.
You know, the health system that we've got today places such an emphasis on speed and numbers. Your suggestion here is very difficult, I think, to find in the medical community, given the fact that, it's a punch card sort of business that we're in many times.
Well, in fact, that's one of the reasons, again, why I felt it was important to write this, because I think a number of the rules that are written about what medical care is about just completely ignore this aspect of medical care.
Alida is not with us today. We were hoping to have her with us today on this segment as well to give that balance that this book is fraught with, the ABAB of the physician and the patient in this case, because she's got an added complication.
That's correct. And she's at the moment with her elderly parents across the country, and both of her parents are ill at the present time, and she's the only child, so she's in the position of both having to try to care for them at the same time as care for herself.
How does her illness impact that?
Difficult. It's difficult for her to fly. She's exhausted all the time. She hurts all the time, and she takes medications that sometimes alter her her sense of calm and so on. There was a time that we talk about in the book, not this time, in which she just within weeks of major surgery, had to fly out to care for her parents, both of whom had major surgery simultaneously. And she was rather dramatic, in which when she talked to her, I think it was her father's surgeon, and mentioned what was going on with her, he just sort of looked totally dumbfounded and said, "How can you do this?"
Wow. This is an amazing book, and one that is inspirational and so enlightening to folks who are dealing with a situation or, you know, may have to. The disease is not me. This affirmation applies to most of my patients. My co-author is not, never has been, a Wegeners. She is Alida. She is a friend and a neighbor, a writer, a thinker, an advisor who carries a private burden that is hidden to most of the outside world. So says Dr. Michael Luxton. We want to thank you very much for being with us and for being the person and the physician that you are. And dancing at the river's edge is something that'll be an inspiration to lots of folks.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Our pleasure. And we wish you the best of the holidays and best to Alida, please.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We've got news coming up for you at 2 o'clock. Be right back. This